The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 402. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest for this installment is a gentleman that is a comic book creator out of the state of Michigan. His name is Nick Gibson, and he has his own imprint called The Phoenix Press. And I met Nick while trying to schedule some folks for the Independent Comic Book Creator Circle, that panel up in Monroe, Michigan at the Monroe Pop Fest this year. And Nick was on the panel. Unfortunately, for yours truly, the video camera that we were working with really kind of messed up in terms of not only the audio quality, but the visual quality as well. And that's why you're obviously never going to see that panel discussion. But I invited Nick to come on to talk about his endeavors. And so he took me up on it. And so we had a great conversation about a week ago. And I can't wait to get into it. But before I do, I need to let you folks know real quickly about a proud sponsor of this podcast. And of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. I say it all the time, and I mean it, that they are your one-stop shop for all your comic book related needs. They've got it all. They've got single issues. They've got hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. They've got cool stuff in the front case. Like the last time I was there about 6 weeks ago, they had some vintage Kenner Star Wars action figures in the front case. They have, of course, graphic novels. They have a great pool system. They have a friendly staff. I could go on and on and on for the next 20 minutes about how great World's Greatest Comics is, but I won't, because you just have to experience it for yourself. So if you're in the Central Ohio area, you need to go over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But if you're out of the area, you could still keep tabs on the store. Just go to their website, wgcomics.com, and you can follow them on Facebook at WG Comics. And I say it every time that I read this copy, and I truly, really, absolutely mean it. Thank you so very much to the fine folks of World's Greatest Comics for being a sponsor. It means a lot to me, and I truly do appreciate it. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Nick Gibson from the Phoenix Press. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening I am sitting down with Nick Gibson. Nick, how you doing, man?
Fine and dandy, like sour candy.
Now, you are the individual behind Phoenix Press. I guess I'm going to ask the question of, is there significance to the name Phoenix Press?
Yeah, there is. So I used to be part of this other company, and then I left the company, and not under the best of circumstances, I'd say. And so basically the Phoenix is kind of emblematic of where I wanted to be. Because you know how, like, the Phoenix represents death, rebirth, you know, coming back, you know, rising from the ashes. And it was all that kind of emotion that I the Phoenix symbolizes. You know, it's like you could be down, you could be beaten, you could be a bloody pulp, but you can always come back stronger than ever.
Well, let's talk about your flagship title. It is called Screecher. And can you give a little summary for the listeners?
Yeah, so Screecher is a tale of a young woman named Avery Fletcher. She comes back to her hometown of Ann Arbor, Michigan after 7 years away. Her father, be jailed for crime and not commit. And now she's forced to become the Winged Avenger Screecher in order to try and clear his name.
So how'd you come up with the concept for the book?
Well, basically with Screecher, I kind of wanted to do like a street-level superhero, kind of in the vein of Batman. Like I had like certain like I kind of wanted to evoke like Batman series, like the 90s DC comics. And so I kind of like meshed together kind of my favorite elements of like Batgirl, Moon Knight, Dove from Titans, Raven, you know, and kind of added my own flair there and there. And that's really where a lot of the Screecher stuff came from.
Now for issue number 2, you currently have a Kickstarter going on, and we talked off air, and you are one of those individuals that, much like many out there, find Kickstarter to be so frustrating. So what's the status right now of Kickstarter campaign for Screecher number 2?
As of this recording, I have not checked it in about an hour and a half, because you know as creators, like refresh. But we're at about 52-53% of the way there. We launched last Friday, so that's pretty good.
Have you had some stressful times with previous Kickstarters? I assume that you've done Kickstarter before.
Yeah, I've done Kickstarters. I've done Indiegogo. So I've done a couple campaigns like Kickstarter, Indiegogo. I mean, it's pretty much the same, just different flavors, really. But yeah, I've had difficulties, especially when kind of starting out. I mean, things are a little bit easier now that I have like a little bit of a fan base. So like, you know, people like what I do, but it's still like, no matter how much my friends say, Nick, you're going to get funded. Look, you funded almost half first day. It's like, I just don't relax until I'm funded. I just can't.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Screecher 2 Friendly Fire, the Kickstarter. So do you have some cool perks or some cool stretch goals for the folks that are donating to the campaign?
Oh, I definitely have both. So
okay.
Obviously I have the book and you can get both, I have two different covers for it. One is like a standard kind of Mortal Kombat inspired poster and inspired cover. The alternate cover is like a Mike Turner art tribute kind of thing, like a Sling done in his style. That's really sweet. You can also get like stickers, trading cards, you know, printouts and like, you know, some collectible stuff. But it's a stretch goal where things really shine. Like a 2K, I got like a special sticker. At 2.5K, I'm going to be doing a line art book. And then at 3K, I'm going to be doing a special cover by like a very, very great artist named Joe M. Sontag.
All right, so when does the campaign end?
It's scheduled to end on... it's really easy to remember. Because remember, the 5th of November.
Oh, nice. Very well done, sir.
I actually didn't like that wasn't my intention. It's just I launched it because like I like to launch on Fridays, and like the 6th was the first Friday of the month. And then like someone in my Discord pointed out, I was like, oh, like it was actually kind of cool.
I must confess, I have a similar thing. I started this podcast on December 12th, 2012. I didn't realize that for like months. And then somebody likewise, a guest was like, so you launched on 12/12/12? I'm like, I'll be damned. It was a Thursday. I was going to stick with Thursdays. I'm like, okay. You know,
imagine launching like a satanic podcast on 6/6/06.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not even realizing it. It's like a decade later. It's like, do you realize your first podcast was on 6/6/06, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's always that, like, I always heard that rumor too. I don't know how true it is. I don't know that Catholic high schools never had 666 as a locker number. I don't know if that's true.
I could believe it.
I don't know. I've always heard that as like growing up as a kid, I heard that and I was like, oh, okay. Makes sense to me, but I have a feeling it probably was a bunch of BS.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised in some schools, maybe it's not like across all Catholic schools, but I would not be surprised if like one or two Catholic schools did it, you know?
Well, let's talk a little bit about the creative team for Screecher. We'll want to definitely make sure that those individuals get a little loving, if you will. So talk to us a little bit about your creative team for Screecher.
All right, so I myself am the writer, so and we're going to talk about enough about me, but I'm just saying, you know, what my position on this team. So the comic is both written and, I mean, not both, like, it's both drawn and inked by named Brian Carew. Like, I have a, always have a problem with his last name. So I always call him Brian Q. Brian is an amazing man. I've worked with him on several projects, like my previous Samurai projects he's worked on. He did the first issue of Screecher. He's returning to this one. He is a great collaborator, and I'll be collaborating with him again. He's a great guy and very talented and very a joy to work with. And honestly, whenever I get his pencils in, I'm just like, yes.
Where did you meet Brian at?
I found him on Fiverr initially, okay. And then I do a lot of my collaborations on Discord. I just find it a lot easier just to put everyone into like the same like Discord channel. And then we can, like, that way there's kind of a good, some good collaboration and work environment. It's worked out pretty well for me in the past. But yeah, we met on Fiverr, and we developed a very good professional relationship, I'd say.
Is he in the Michigan area, or is he somewhere else?
He's from overseas. He's an artist from Argentina, but he's really talented.
Gotcha. Okay. Anybody else on the on Screecher that you want to, you know, highlight real quick?
Oh, yes. I got a couple other people I wanted to highlight. So for this issue, we brought on a new colorist named Ardent Black. They're from the UK, and oh my goody. The colors for the first issue were good, but like this new colorist just takes things to like a whole new level. Like every new colored page was just such a treat. Their attention to detail, especially when it comes to lighting, it looks so freaking amazing. And I'm just, like, it would make, I would back this comic if I was even on it. So it's like, you know, I mean, that's easy to say, but you know, like, oh my God, it's like the art is just so good.
Okay. Well, let's chat about your other book, and you kind of briefly mentioned it, 2100 Samurai. I gotta say, when I looked through it, it's got a real Blade Runner vibe to it. Was that type of sci-fi an inspiration for creating the tale?
Yes, definitely. So with Turn Samurai, I was trying to like blend kind of like East, West, like Japanese manga meets American Western comics. And I would say the two properties like that had the biggest influence on Turn Samurai was, yes, Blade Runner, but also Ghost in the Shell.
Okay, I could see that too. Now that you mentioned, I can see where that would be a very fair comparison. So let's talk a little bit about the creative crew for 2100 Samurai, because it is a different crew. So can you highlight some of those talented individuals that helped out on the book?
Well, this one's a bit smaller since it's a black and white book, but it's pretty much the me and Brian show. Like, Brian also does the art for that. And for the third issue, he really stepped it up. Like, we were just doing, like, black and white, like, very stark black and white. Contrasty, but like with the third issue, we switched it up to more of a grayscale style, and that looked beautiful. And then what's really cool is I had like a special like Blood and Steel edition where it's like black, white, and then red. So like the blood was like, you know, red, or like the red hair people, you know, like that kind of thing. And it just, it looks really, really good. And my aim is eventually release like a full on book of that style, and it's just gonna look amazing.
Do you have plans for 2100 Samurai? Because it seems like you did three issues, and is it kind of on the back burner right now while you're working on Screecher, or can fans expect more 2100 Samurai?
Yeah, so basically my process is I work on one project in the night, and then I leapfrog to the other. Like, basically, Torrent Samurai comes out kind of like in the spring, and then Screecher comes out in the fall.
Okay.
So right now my plan is I'm planning on starting work on issue 4. Turn Samurai in November, and then that's going to be released sometime April or May. Like, that's currently my tentative schedule right now.
Okay, that's a smart idea, actually. I know many creators that have two books that they kind of jump back and forth between, and, mm-hmm. and it seems to work very well for them. Well, let's talk a little bit about yourself. When did you start making comics?
I'd probably say I really, like, I was kind of like dipping my toes in from as early as 2008. But I really earnestly kind of started it like 2017, 2018, because I was with that previous company, and we did release the first version of my original comic Project Axis. And then after I left that company, I released a new version of Project Axis, kind of slightly revamped. That project kind of fell by the wayside, and I started up Torn Samurai, and I did a couple of those, and I started Screecher, and that's kind of where I where I am now. So like probably in earnest 2017, 2018, and then Scene Express itself starting in 2019.
Were you always creative? Like when you were a kid, were you always coming up with different stories and creating universes and whatnot, whether it was with action figures or your own creations or whatnot?
Oh, very, very much so. Like, I've been making comics since, like, first and second grade. Like, you ask my mother, and she'll go on about a story about, like, oh, he used to make this comic called The Adventures of Superboy and Comet Boy. And, like, at the end, he'd always be in bed. You know, it's like, you know, I take, like, the scrap pieces of paper, because, you know, it's like first or second grade. And I'd like make the comics, you know, like, I'd been doing that. Like, I wish I still had those, but, like, that's, like, you know, like 30 years ago, kind of. So it's like, those are long, long into the molecules. So, but like, if I ran across those, I would keep them.
Maybe you could reboot them.
Well, Superboy is copyrighted, but like,
well, Comet, yeah, I mean, yeah, yeah, man.
Comet Boy, who knows? Like, who knows?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
It was like so crazy. Like I can remember, like I gave like Superboy like Wolverine claws for some reason. Like there's a picture of him just like digging through a wall. Like it's just copyright heck, you know?
Yes. Like, yes. But you know what? As a little kid, I don't think Marvel or DC would have sent you a cease and desist order. Hopefully, you know, not.
Well, nowadays they might, but back then they couldn't care less.
I was going to say, nowadays, in fact, they're probably sending me a cease and desist order right now because I said their name on this podcast. I'm probably
How dare you say our name and not be utterly flattering.
But what were some of your favorite comics as a kid? Or even now, as an adult? I shouldn't put just that parameter on it.
Yeah, why limit yourself, you know?
Exactly.
Speaking in a general sense, obviously I've mentioned Batman, like obviously, you know, Batman, Nightwing, some of the characters I enjoy are, Daredevil, for sure. Always kind of like the X-Men stuff, Spider-Man. And like, I always liked Spider-Man, but I think my love of Spider-Man has really only blossomed like recently, like, or I've really kind of delved into the character and just kind of like gone into this world where I've gotten a really big appreciation for him. So Spider-Man, add Spider-Man to that list. Beyond that, like Legion of Superheroes, Spawn. And as if we want to talk about like Japanese manga, like we talk about Ghost in the Shell, Shaman King, Bleach, lots of different things.
Can we talk real quick about your new appreciation for Spider-Man? Do you think that's because of the tie-ins with the movies that obviously have been very successful the last couple? Do you think that played a role in it or no?
I would say, yeah. Like, I always liked the Tobey Spider-Man movies. Like, I watched Spider-Man the Animated Series as a kid, you know. Like, I liked them. I always, because they're like, oh, I like those shows. Like, and like, yeah, I always liked the Tobey Spider-Man movies. You know, Tobey is still my Spider-Man. But, like, it just more of, like, as I get into the comics and I'm kind of exposed to more, like, the backstory, I'd say my love really solidified probably when I played the PS4 game. Kind of like played through that and like really kind of got into like the heart of Spider-Man. And then like, you know, Amazing Spider-Man, I for the longest time, I never really was too big of a fan because like I always felt like, oh, it's just a pale imitation of the Raimi films. But like, honestly, as things have kind of gone on and I just kind of judge them on their own merit, I've grown to really, really like the Amazing films. So much so that while Tobey is still my favorite Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man, and this might be kind of blasphemous, is kind of my favorite Spider-Man film. It's weird.
No judgment here on. I don't think there's been a truly awful Spider-Man movie. There's been some bad ones, but I don't mean like absolutely god awful like there has been with other comic book like franchises.
Holland is definitely my least favorite.
Yeah.
But he's by no means bad. I would say my problem with like the Holland films, at least the first two, is they're a bit more Iron Boy-y. Like No Way Home to me was like the first proper Spider-Man film that he had. Like the first two films aren't bad. Like the Vulture, I really, really dig the Vulture. Like to me, the Vulture is a Raimi villain. Like he is a very much kind of in that Raimi mold of like the relatability, you know, like the the thing I always liked about the Raimi villains was you could see yourself, you know, like, oh, I could be that person. Like, if I was in a situation and that stuff happened to me, yeah, I could see myself doing exactly what they did. And, like, that, to me, was the beauty of the Raimi villains. And the Vulture is the same way, where it's like, yeah, if I was in his situation, I might do the same exact thing. And I love, like, the Vulture, because motivation are, I'm he's not really a villain. He's just doing bad things for his family. You know, kind of a motivation that lots of us can understand.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I thought that was the bright spot of that film. I feel like it's personally in me, I think the third Toby film is the worst, but it's still not abysmal. It's
not a bad film, and there are, like, I always said there is a good film buried in there. Like the stuff with, like, the Sandman, like the scene themes of forgiveness are just quintessential, like, Raimi Spider-Man. Like, that stuff is really freaking good. The Venom, like, you can tell Sam Raimi did not want to have Venom in there. You could tell he was really going with the motions with that part of the movie. But, like, the stuff with the Sandman, there's a lot of heart to it. I think Thomas Hayden Church does a great performance. And just, like, you know, and like, even the stuff with Harry, I think that stuff is a little bit, could have used a few more passes, but it's solid.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Now, the Venom movies, on the other hand...
they are dumb fun. Like, they are dumb fun. And if you just kind of, like, I don't like the whole, like, turn your brain off, but this is definitely a turn your brain off and just have fun kind of movie, because, like, they're very entertaining. The interaction between Venom and Brock is honestly really good. And just, they're just dumb fun. They're just dumb fun. You just go have fun.
You know, I think my biggest gripe, and I actually will be honest, I've only seen the first one. I haven't seen the second one. I think my biggest gripe was, it's kind of the same gripe that I have with Transformer movies, is they kind of all look the same in the Transformers. So you don't really know who's, at times I get lost who's fighting who. And the same thing with Venom, when he took on the adversary with the symbiote suit as well. I'm like, which one's Eddie Brock? I don't know. And I
want to,
like,
say, as far as Clary is concerned, this one will be a little bit better, because honestly, it's like Carnage, and he's red versus black, and like the design is a little bit different. Like Venom kind of has more of, like, the ovaly eyes, whereas Carnage is more like more narrower. Kind of, like, there's a lot more visual distinction between the characters now.
Good. Okay. Like I said, I haven't seen the second one. I just never got to it. It's one of those ones on my list, but there were other movies that I wanted to see that I was like, yeah, I can wait till this comes out on rental or streaming somewhere.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Nick for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are a proud sponsor of the PVD cast, and they are your one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies. They got all the bases covered. So check out the store online by stopping by their website, wgcomics.com. They're pretty active on their Facebook page as well. Just look for at WG Comics. And if you're in the area, stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio.
All right, well, let's talk here real quickly that you love memes. I saw that on your Facebook page for the Phoenix Press. So what makes a great meme, in your opinion?
That is a very loaded question, my friend. It's like, you put me on the spot here, but like, it's kind of like, you know, a good meme when you see them. It's like memes aren't something you can quantify. And that is something like, it's like whenever you see like corporate memes, or like when they show memes in TV shows, they're always like really bad. It's because you can't quantify, like, memes are like humor. It's all context sensitive. It's all culturally sensitive. Like you could show me a meme for Britain where, like, a British person, they laugh their butt off. But me, I'm like, huh? Yeah, you know, it's very culturally sensitive. Like, memes are basically the political cartoons of our time, if you will.
Oh, I never thought of it that way. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you look at political cartoons throughout history, they look like memes, you know? You know, or just like the one panel, like comic strips kind of thing, you know, like Far Side, you know, like if you go read a Far Side comic from like 1990, it looks like a meme, you know?
Yeah.
And sure, you have your meme templates, you know, and those are kind of good skeletons. But it's all about, it's like you see a meme and it's like, oh, hey, I get the reference. Ha ha. You know, kind of thing.
You know, it clicked with me, and I really, honest to goodness, I just started really kind of diving into political cartoons. Now, just out of curiosity, I've been to a couple comic book shows that are more independent oriented, and there happened to be a couple vendors there. I just actually a couple weekends ago was at one, and I kind of, I don't know why, I just started really being fascinated by, you know, because I don't think as a kid I picked up on that because it was just, it was politics. It was, you know, mm-hmm. right over my head. So I don't know why, but I've been starting to like really pay attention to those type of political cartoons. And mm-hmm. you're right. They are like a meme. You're absolutely right. I just never thought of it that way.
The more you know.
Do you have a favorite meme?
Oh, that's like asking to pick your favorite children.
Okay, well,
I would probably say among all the Streaker memes I've made, probably is the one where, you know, like the It's Morbin Time thing.
Yeah.
So like a fan actually suggested this. So what I did is I took Streaker's head and I put it on top of Jared Leto's, and the meme says it's Screeching Time. Nice. See, that's one of those things where it's like context sensitive. Like. Right. Like, you have to know about the Morbin Time meme. You have to know about Morbius. You know, you have to know about all this stuff before to even look at it and laugh. You know, like, memes always have this baggage with them that you have to have the baggage in order to understand it and laugh.
Okay. Well, what can listeners check out if they go to YouTube and they go to the Phoenix Press YouTube channel? What can they see there?
They can see some really good content. I put out stuff multiple times a week on Mondays. I have my rewatch series. We're currently diving through the final season of Avatar: The Last Airbender. That's been a really good ride, me and my partner. On Wednesdays, we do Comics Watch, where we watch comics. Now, just kidding. It's where we talk about a wide variety of comics-related topics, like the three pillars, like interviews, reviews, commentary kind of thing. And then on Fridays, I have like my big live stream. It's called the Friday Night Frenzy, where we talk about a lot of really great things. On Saturday, I do like a video game live stream, you know, currently playing through like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. Just kind of started that, was playing Spider-Man. It's just a really good time.
Cool. And that is over there, youtube.com/ThePhoenixPress.
I believe so. Yes. If nothing else, just search The Phoenix Press on YouTube. It'll take you right there.
Okay. Well, let's talk about another social media-like outlet that you have here, the Patreon page. First of all, how is that going? Because I have to confess, I've always wanted to have a Patreon page, but it seems like it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's been a bit touch and go. I got, like, one patron who donates stuff, so, like, that's my motivator to like, post things and whatnot. But, like, beyond that, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where it's like, I don't want to post stuff if no one's watching. So it's like kind of like a cart before horse. It's motivation's a really, really hard factor for that.
Well, what can folks see if they do go to the Patreon page and they do donate? What are some of the cool things that they can get?
Well, you get behind the scenes info on my comics. So like when I have like a new pencil page, when I have like new stuff, I will post it there, before the public gets to see it, you know, I post my videos there at least the night before. So, like, you know, when I upload the videos the night before, I upload it to the Patreon as well. So, like, all my YouTube videos you'll get to see early and whatnot. And then once things start going, I'll plan on doing, like, a monthly live stream. You know, people will be able to pick, like, the movie night or the stuff we watch. You know, like, want me to watch a really bad movie? All right, you know, pay some money and I'll gladly do it, you know.
Okay, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about upcoming projects. I know you said you're going to start issue 4 of 2100 Samurai. Do you have mm-hmm. any other projects that you would like to talk about that the fans should keep their eyes out for?
I mean, the only really other things I got in the works are Screecher number 3 is going to be coming in the fall of next year. We're currently trying to build up towards a full volume. So there's going to be 4 issues in volume 1 of Screecher, and then 5 of Turn Samurai. And then once we finish those volumes, I'm going to kind of go back, fix some things, maybe redraw some stuff, and then release like a trade paperback manga volume of each book. And then the hope is I get enough money from that. I may release some bookstores to where that like volume two will come around a lot sooner than the next time.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question that's probably going to put you on the spot, much like the meme question here. But let's say, Nick, you get an opportunity to work on your dream project. What would that be?
You mean like an established property?
Yes.
This answer is probably going to be entirely predictable given what I've said so far, but Batman, you know?
Really? Okay.
Batman, Nightwing. They're talking strictly comics, right?
Yes, sure. I mean, do you have another project that you,
I'd love to work on Power Rangers. Like, I'd love to be like, okay, either do like the Power Rangers comics or dare I say even be a showrunner for Power Rangers. But beyond that, I'd really, really want to write a Zorro story. Cause like, I've always had a really soft spot for Zorro. You know, the Antonio Banderas film, like The Mask of Zorro, is like one of my favorite films of all time. And I would really like to do a Zorro story. Let's see here. Daredevil would, like if Marvel would be like, okay, you work whatever you want, I'd be like, Daredevil, you sure? Like, we're willing to offer you Spider-Man, Daredevil.
What do you think is the draw for Daredevil for you? Is it,
I think it's, I'm gonna basically kind of repeat what Frank Miller has said in interviews. So like, these words are not mine, the Frank Millers. I'm just get that out there. So Frank Miller said, what hero is known for what they can't do?
Oh, nice. Okay.
Because Spider-Man crawls up walls. Superman can fly. Daredevil is blind, you know? And with Daredevil, it's kind of like one of those like limitations breed innovation kind of thing. Because with Daredevil, yes, he's got these powers. It's kind of the reason why like stuff like Batman and Spider-Man are really interesting to read, because they're really easy characters to write for, because they have this unique power set. You know, Batman has his situation, or like Spider-Man, the way he moves, the way his powers work are very unique, which leads to very unique kind of like situations and stories. You know, like for example, you play a Superman game, you're just flying through Metropolis. You play a Spider-Man game, you're swinging through New York, you know, and it makes a more interesting game dynamic or comic or story because these unique characters, unique situations. So like with Daredevil, he's blind, he's got his radar sense, you know, his hearing thing, and obviously the whole Catholic guilt, his relationship, the lawyer, like, you know, justice by day, justice by night, you know, like that kind of thing. It's a really interesting set of story kind of things that just really just begs for the imagination.
In your opinion, who's the better Daredevil, Ben Affleck or Charlie Cox?
Oh, that is a tough one, because I grew up with the Ben Affleck one. I've always maintained the Daredevil movie is actually good, even the theatrical version. Is like, everyone says, oh, the director's cut is the best. Like, yes, the director's cut is better. But the original version is not terrible. And Michael Clark Duncan, I'm going to say this. Like, Vincent D'Onofrio is not a bad Kingpin. Michael Clark Duncan was a better Kingpin. I'm sorry. Like just the sheer, like, the physicality of him, his presence. Like, Michael Clark Duncan gets in your face. I think I wet myself. Like Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin gets in your face. Yeah, you're scared. But Michael Clark Duncan's Kingpin just has that kind of quiet intimidation. Like, he just walks up to you and he just kind of looks down at you. You're scared. Vincent D'Onofrio, he looks at you. He has like this white hot rage in his face where like he's about to bash your head in with a car, you know? And it's like, you get that fear. It's just kind of a different kind of intimidation, you know?
I thought Vincent D'Onofrio did a fantastic job as the Kingpin.
Agreed. I'm not saying either are bad.
No. Bad. But I think, like, especially coming off of what I knew him best as is, you know, Detective Gorin, who was a very weird character, to say the least. And so to see him be such a strong, put together, smooth criminal, if you will, in the Kingpin. Well, yeah, I was blown away by his performance.
Oh, you want to be really blown away? Go watch the first half of Full Metal Jacket, and then immediately watch Daredevil.
Yeah.
It is like such, like, Vincent D'Onofrio is probably one of the most underrated actors of our time, because he is an amazing actor. But, like, look at his performance in Full Metal Jacket, which is the beginning of his career, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And look at him now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so, it's like two different people.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. All right, well, Nick, as we're getting close to time here to wrapping things up, let's talk about some upcoming appearances, social media, website, that type of stuff. Do you have anywhere you're going to be? I know most cons are starting to cycle down as we're getting into the holiday season, so there might not be many on the docket for you, but do you have any?
I do. I will actually be at the Blue Water Comic-Con in Port Huron next month. That'll probably be my last big one, semi-big one for the year. And then I probably won't do one again until February, where it's like the Great Lakes Comic Con, like their main show. I'll be at that one. That's like one of my big shows. That's like the start of the year. So yeah, you know, beyond that, I have various podcasts. Nothing too major, but a lot, you know, some good ones. But yeah, gonna be finishing this up and then starting Turn Samurai.
All right. How about that social media? How about website? All that information where folks can follow you online.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at the Phoenix Press. YouTube shirts the same. I'm also on Instagram, the.phoenix.press. And yeah, those are basically my main ones. And feel free to follow me there. But and if you're looking for some good comics, I currently have Screeching Number 2, Friendly Fire, currently on Kickstarter. So feel free to search that. I'm sure there'll be a link floating around somewhere. We're going for 30 days. We're ending on the 5th of November.
And yeah, folks, if you want a cool comic, check it out. Go over to Kickstarter and look for Screecher Number 2, Friendly Fire. If you want, plunk down your money. You know what? And I even say this, if I may, Nick, even maybe hard times are falling upon you. You don't have a lot of cash. At least tell some folks about the Kickstarter. I think that
sharing is caring.
Yeah, sharing is caring indeed. That's a very good way to think about it, Nick. But yeah, get the word out there. I mean, I understand there's sometimes, you know, money's tight, but if you can spread the word, that would help you out. That would help as well.
And I'm actually going to be honest with you. Sometimes sharing can actually kind of help more than donating. Like if it's between like, if someone has said, all right, I can donate to you like $1, $5, or I can share it and potentially get it in front of these people. I'll say, share it. Don't give me the money. Just share it, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. Well, Nick, thanks so much, man, for taking some time out of your night to sit down and chat with me. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Nick Gibson from the Phoenix Press, talking about his various projects, and we even tackled some other interesting subjects such as memes, Daredevil, Spider-Man, etc., etc. And I hope you enjoyed this episode, and you can let me know if you did or did not enjoy this episode. So let me tell you how you can get in touch with me. First of all, if you're old school, you can shoot me an email. johnorlando@pvdcast.com is my email address. You can find me on Twitter, or X, as it's called now, and my personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look for @PVDcast. If you want to let some folks know where they can hear the PVDcast, well, let them know that it's available at PVDcast.com, the online home of yours truly, and through all of those major podcasting outlets. All you have to do is go to the search bar of your favorite podcasting app, put in the PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And if you are using one of those apps or outlets for your listening, you really need to help me out. That's right. You need to help me out. All you got to do is, after you listen to an episode, is rate and review. Give it as many stars as you think I deserve. And just leave a couple of words. You know, great episode, really enjoyed it, whatever. And it helps me out in the algorithm. It helps me out with the podcasting outlets. So it's super important, and I really would appreciate it if you would do that for me. But I got off track because there's a couple other places where you can hear the PVD cast. Every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page, I do a little broadcast. And of course, if you love internet radio, then you probably already know about CROC Radio. That's right, Croc Radio out of British Columbia, a great internet radio station. And the PVD cast is also available there on Saturday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can listen through Croc Radio. So just go to wherever you find great internet radio stations. Croc will be in that directory. Click on the link. Go and listen to my show and all the great shows on CROC Radio out of Kimberley, British Columbia. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once again for checking out this episode. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2023.